It's good to see everybody this evening. Maybe a few others will come in. I know it's spring break and a lot of families are gone, as Teddy says. Good to see Teddy's sister. I'm at that stage where my eyes are getting worse, I guess, and I'm still fighting the old reading glass thing. I'm not used to it, so if I act... But like right now, I can't see my text. I used to be able to, but now I can. So it's kind of weird to me. I'm still getting used to the reading glass phenomenon. I talked to Mike Bonner today on the phone about Bible class, and the curriculum moves us on to the character of Jacob. But, and I'm going to talk about Jacob tonight, but Mike may come back on Sunday, Lord willing, and talk about Abraham again because of the amount of principal content I think you have with Abraham and his character in the Bible. So I'm going to do my best to talk about Jacob, the father of the nation of Israel. So we'll do that here in just a moment. Before we get started, we'll have a word of prayer, and we'll study. So let's talk about the character of Jacob, but let me do something first. I kind of like to point out things that I think are interesting that associate with the main subject of your study. For example, who was Jacob's twin brother, and maybe elder brother, from the standpoint that he was born first?
Esau,
that's correct. And being that Esau was the older, from the standpoint that he was born first, the traditional blessing to the older did not take place in the relationship with Jacob and Esau. And I'm sure most of us are familiar with that the birthright blessing will go to Jacob. In fact, Esau will sell his birthright. And everybody somewhat familiar with that story in the Bible? Let's do something real quick. Let's go to the book of Hebrews chapter 12, and I want to do a little retro studying backwards as we put Jacob on display. But let's talk about Esau here. Hebrews chapter 12, we don't want to act like Esau. We don't want to be his kind of a character. So look at chapter 12, and let's start at verse 14. Hebrews 12, 14. The Hebrews writer says, "Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled." Now watch the context here, talking about the root of bitterness and this thing that would defile many people. Verse 16, "Lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright." That's Genesis 25, verse 33. Now watch verse 17. "For ye know how that afterward, when he would have inherited the blessing, he was rejected. For he found no place of repentance." He could not get it back. It was unattainable. There was no way to change the mind or the situation. And he could not, again, regain his status, so to speak, though he carefully did so or sought it with tears. Verse 18. "I want you to notice here, for you're not come unto the mount that might be touched and that burned with fire, nor unto blackness and darkness and tempest." And so he's making a transition into the thought of the physical tabernacle and the physical law that was given through Moses and the spiritual that is ours in Christ. But why here is Esau, before discussing this spiritual kingdom, a kingdom that's eternal and unable to be destroyed, verses 28 and 29, I find it interesting that Esau, Jacob's brother, twin brother, is utilized as a character flaw to study and to be reminded of to not behave or act like him. So what I'm saying is that we need to know the character of both Jacob and Esau. As we study Jacob, we're going to look at Esau. Now, backtracking through the Old Testament, how many times have you come across Esau's name being referred to in a negative way? Or can you recall perhaps prophets referring to Esau in a negative way? It happens over and over again. In Malachi, the prophet 400 some years before the Christ refers to Esau in a way in which God expresses a lesser love. The word is hate. And the idea of hate is loveless, regardless, have less affection for because of character or attitude. So don't misunderstand the idea. But in Malachi chapter 1 verse 2, the prophet reminded the people then, I have loved you, says the Lord, yet you ask, how have you loved us? Wasn't Esau Jacob's brother? Is the answer. This is the Lord's declaration, even so I loved Jacob. Now I think the statement is interesting. Malachi 1 3 continues, the next verse says, but I hated Esau. I turned his mountains into a wasteland and gave his inheritance to the desert jackals. The characteristic of Esau is something that doesn't stop with just Esau himself. The point is that the calamity of his attitude, as we read in Hebrews 12, the calamity of his character carried on throughout generations. The generational attitude, if you will, that was adopted, so to speak. Anybody ever heard of the statement, and this is just a point of reference, anybody ever heard of the statement, generational poverty? You ought to look it up. Generational poverty, what does it sound like? Just curious. It's an opinion question. I'm just curious what you might...
Repetition, each generation keeps on the same path.
Keeps on. That's exactly right, Paul. And that statement is utilized in governmental, economical circumstances usually. And it's talking about the repetitive behaviors or characteristics that create or promote poverty. Hang on just a second. Get that out of there. So, think about that. Today, people parrot and repeat the same old characteristics and behaviors of what often they have been taught or learned from whom? Their families, their parents, that's right. And sometimes reflects in their then generational poverty. Their mindset is one of impoverished attitudes. Defeatist. Anybody ever heard of the phrase defeatist attitudes? Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you believe, or let me ask it this way, do you know that you have free moral agency? If I were to ask you this question, and I have asked this question, do you have to act like your mom and dad? Do you have to do like your mom and dad? And you got it down right there. You said, no, I don't. Because you recognize you have choice. But systemically speaking, and that means just infectiously, it just seems like a disease. How many people repeat over and over again the same old character flaws of their generations? That's the idea here utilized talking about Esau in the Bible. And Esau's family is not reflected very well throughout history. And you have to associate that with his character. And that goes back to the book of Genesis, where we'll study about both Jacob and Esau. Jeremiah talks about Esau. Look at Jeremiah chapter 49. Obadiah talks about Esau. If you want to write these verses down, I'll give them to you. Jeremiah 49, verse 8 and verse 10. And Obadiah chapter 1, verse 6, verse 8 and 9. And Obadiah 1, verse 18, 19, and 21. Obadiah's prophecy is against the Edomites. And it's a prophet that tells them of their destruction. And no survivor will remain of the house of Esau in Obadiah chapter 1, verse 18. But the calamity of this people is on display in the Bible from about 2000 B.C. all the way to 400 B.C. before Christ. So you have about a 1,500-year period of time where you learn about how not to behave. And again, that goes back to what the Hebrews writer teaches us. So let's go back to the book of Genesis and let's talk about Jacob now, Jacob and Esau, but Jacob primarily. And remember these major contexts in the book of Genesis. Let me give you the breakdown briefly. In Genesis chapter 1 through chapter 11, first 11 chapters, what does the book of Genesis basically deal with? Anybody have an idea? Genesis chapter 1 to chapter 11. That's right. Basically, the first 11 chapters get us to Abraham. The creation, Noah's flood, the Tower of Babel. Shows us the effects of sin in the world. And then in chapter 12 through chapter 25, these are the major sections in the book of Genesis. Chapter 12 through chapter 25, what is the main character being discussed? You know it, I'm just... That's right. And the subject matter there is faithfulness. Showing the character of faithfulness. This is why Abraham is so important in the Bible. He's one of the first characters to shine where God gives the promise of all nations would be blessed through him and his seed. That seed would be Isaac, not Ishmael. But here's the next interesting point. How much context is devoted to Isaac, the promised son that finally is born to Abraham and Sarah, as compared to the amount of context to Jacob? And Esau, really, but Jacob primarily. You ever thought about that? When you study the book of Genesis, it almost kind of, it just skips over Isaac. It doesn't. Isaac's the one that God tells to go sacrifice, but Genesis 21 is where Isaac is born. Genesis 22 is where he's told to sacrifice him. And then he goes and finds him a wife of his own people, Genesis 23, 24, and then Abraham dies in chapter 25. And you have the funeral, basically, and then guess what we get to in chapter 25? The birth of Jacob and Esau. So from Genesis 25 all the way to Genesis 36, 11 chapters are really devoted to the development of Jacob, God's promise to Jacob, through Jacob, not Esau, because of what happens, and the marriages, the relationship with Laban, his father-in-law, and being tricked into marrying Leah first and then working another 7 years for, what was her name? Rachel. I was thinking Rebecca again. I knew that wasn't right. And then what happens next in the book of Genesis? From Genesis 36, really, the sons, 12 sons of Jacob or Israel, his name is changed to Israel, the 12 sons of Jacob or Israel. From Genesis 36 to the end of the book, what's the end of the book of Genesis all about? That's it. I would say Joseph. So if I were to backtrack here and say the main characters in the book of Genesis, the main characters that are being talked about, who would you say they are from Genesis chapter 1 to chapter 9? It's an opinion question, so I'm not going to. Adam and Eve, Noah, and then Noah's son. Alright, and then after those, who's the next character? Abraham. And then Abraham, it's not really Isaac, it goes to Jacob. I mean, Isaac's in there, don't misunderstand. But the amount of content, scripture, content, focuses upon the character of Jacob. So, and then goes to Joseph. And Joseph, by the way, which one of the sons of Jacob or Israel will be the son or the tribe where Christ will come through?
Judah.
And which tribe is, so that's not Joseph then, right? It's not Joseph. Joseph and Benjamin. Alright. By the way, you remember the two half tribes that will come out of Joseph? Manasseh and Ephraim. And anybody remember who the northern kingdom is referred to in the Old Testament when the nation split, the kings divide, Rehoboam, Jeroboam, and in time, God will refer to the northern kingdom as, well, Israel, but something else, a name, a half-tribe name. The Ephraimites, they call them Ephraim. And if you don't catch that, you might not catch who he's talking about. So those are just some things to point out in the study of the Bible. Any questions before we look at Genesis 25 a little bit closer? Okay. Now, the character of Jacob, anybody remember what Jacob's name means? Say again? Well, yeah, supplanter is what I have, which is the idea. So think about it from this standpoint. One commentator, and I don't, give credit, but guys write their thoughts down. I'm talking about older guys. I don't read all these young whippersnappers who think they know stuff. But anyway, an older guy said the character of Jacob is very independent. When you think about Jacob, think about independence, an independent person. And I think that that's pretty interesting because it'll be Jacob who wrestles with an angel, the angel of the Lord. It's Jacob who says, "Give me my blessing." You know, he's quite the independent character, and when he faces off with Laban, his father-in-law, yeah, that's an interesting context. And then you remember when they finally leave Laban, his father-in-law, Laban pursues after them and he doesn't understand why. And you remember which one of the wives had all the idols? Yeah. And then you get look at Jacob's life unfold, and I'm giving you just kind of the periscope view here. You look at Jacob's life, he's got his wives, he's got his children and his wives, and then what happens to his favorite wife, I guess, when she's having Benjamin? She dies. And then he has to face off with his brother before then, meets him, and you remember he sends his families before him to try to kind of make some peace, it seems. Do you see the outcome of character? These are consequential things that take place. And in all of this, we're supposed to learn from Jacob, Esau, and the characters in the Bible. So there's something here. There's a reason why we're reading this. I mean, obviously we know that. But let's look at Genesis 25. And one of the first things that I think we need to notice is of course, Isaac and Rebekah. In verse 21, Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived, and the children, plural, struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And what did the Lord say to her in verse 23? Yeah, two nations, and then further predicted there is that what will happen to the stronger? The elder will do what? And so the prediction is stated here. Now I want to point something out here. This is God's omniscience. He knows all things, and he knew beforehand the characters, the personalities, and he declares unto Rebekah, you've got two nations that are in your womb. Let's stop, though, and go back to Genesis 12 and remember Abraham would be a father of many nations. Look at Genesis 12, verse 3. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee, and in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. Look at verse 7. This unfolding of this plan, and the Lord appeared unto Abram and said unto thy seed will I give this land, and there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. Abraham, a father of many nations, you see this developing within Rebekah's womb. She has twins, and these are the representation of two nations. A nation that will become, in many ways, principally used in the New Testament as an example of God bringing about his will through nations. Let's, again, fast forward. Look at Romans chapter 4. Look at what Paul says of Abraham. These are, remember, these are Abraham's grandchildren. Romans chapter 4, starting at about verse 17, as it is written, I have made thee a father of many nations, talking to Abraham, that's quoting from Genesis 17, verse 5, before him whom he believed, even God who quickeneth the dead, and calleth those things which be not as though they were. You see that phrase there? That last phrase in verse 17, and calleth those things which be not as though they were. What's that talking about? When God told Rebekah, you've got two nations in your womb. Is he speaking literally, or is he speaking about what would become? Calling things that were not as yet. That's the omniscience of God. And God knowing those things, think about the foresight. This is all the Old Testament's full of this. This is what the Old Testament's all about. This is God saying to Rebekah, and of course, by proxy, Isaac, that in your womb is actually, if you could see the future, the result of two nations. Now, if you knew every choice you made in your life, particularly having children, what the results would be, how would that affect you in regard to faith? If you knew that your children or your offspring would be something that was either great or something terrible, or maybe something mediocre, how would that affect you going forward in your life? And we don't get that information today because we're not inspired and God's not speaking to us directly. But he was then, because he had a plan that was unfolding, and it was to feed their faith. You have to remember that they are still struggling with a problem that was created by their ancestors, Adam and Eve. And that struggle with death, the answer to the death problem, was still unclear. Still unclear. Now, what's interesting in this context There's two different people that I know of, Abraham being one and Job another, that knew somewhere, somehow, the death problem would be solved by God, and the Hebrews writer in Hebrews chapter 11 tells us that when Abraham was told to kill his only begotten son, Abraham by faith knew that God would have to do what? Bring him back to life. But even in that, that wasn't a complete picture or answer. Abraham just knew, as strangers and pilgrims in the world, that life and death was in the power of God. But how many of us remember also another character around the same time frame? You remember the character of Job? And I've often wondered about the knowledge that existed in the ancient world. Look at Job 19. I'd say it, but you'd remember it. But I want to just look at it. As these Old Testament patrons are trying to figure things out, look at Job 19, verse 25. Well, let's just back up to verse 22. Job 19, verse 22. And remember, his friends are not very friendly, kind of cruel. And listen to what Job says, verse 22. Why do ye persecute me as God and are not satisfied with my flesh? Oh, that my words were not written. Oh, that they were printed in a book, that they were graven with an iron pen and lead in the rock forever. Now watch verse 25. For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh shall I see God, whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold and not another, though my reins be consumed within me. But ye should say, why persecute we him, seeing the root of the matter is found in me? Be ye afraid of the sword, for wrath bringeth the punishments of the sword, that ye may know there is a judgment day. Something's coming. But how clear were they in that picture? I don't know who or what told Job about this judgment day, but they had a sense in which there was some kind of a judgment coming, and life and death was in the reins of God Almighty. And Job calls him the Redeemer. Redemption. What is redemption? What's the idea of redemption? Buying back, right? Well, they were getting these glimpses of information through God Almighty, inspired. And just like with Rebecca, she's told, you've got two nations in your belly. She's given a bigger picture. And that would have affected her faith to focus upon the bigger scheme of redemption, redemption, redemption. And if they had been taught, and they surely had, because Isaac was born of a mother who had been barren. You remember that? And she would have had to teach her son this. And here's Isaac, the father of two nations now. And Isaac knows that his father was told that my dad, Abraham's going to be the father of many nations. And that through him, all nations are going to be blessed. And this is revelation and information they were gaining, but they didn't get the clear picture. And we have the clear picture today. And it's amazing. It's amazing that we can look back and say, wow. And in all of that, as Paul says there in Romans 4:17, God, who can see all things, can call it out beforehand. But in all of that, never intersecting or interfering with the choices that people make. And that brings it back to Jacob. Jacob is a character that almost seems like he shouldn't be an heir, the seed line heir, because Jacob was what kind of a person? I wonder if Jacob picked up on some weaknesses of his brother Esau. Does that statement make sense? I wonder if Jacob was keen enough to recognize some of the weaknesses of his brother Esau.
He had to be, to know that he could
outwit him, outsmart him, maybe. Well, I read another observation today that was interesting. This is just free charge. You can take it or leave it. But what kind of a person was Esau? When he was born, what did he like to do? He liked, did you say fish? I guess all things hunting is all things fishing, I guess. He liked to eat of his own hunted, you know, his food, right? Henry Morrison, or Morse, who was a known academic scholar who's written a lot on the creation and so forth, and he's a scientist guy. He made a comment about Esau, that Esau, his character, though we might read it as this valiant hunter, strong man, was actually an irresponsible man who did what Esau wanted to do, went and hunted, didn't want to go to school, didn't want to stay close to home and work on the farm. And this was his point, I thought was interesting. He said, because they had plenty of meat. After all, what kind of people were the Abraham's descendants? What kind of people were they? Shepherds. They raised animals. So I can hear in the back of my head my pawpaw and papaw and those who went to war and suffered greatly in World War II, but I can remember them all unequivocally. Every one of them that I've talked to said, I went and joined the army and the military to get off the farm, because I thought it might be easier. I've had that said to me several times by different World War II guys. Of course, they're dead and gone now. And what they were telling me was that it wasn't all that glory. It was actually, when they actually suffered in the war, it was bad. But they were trying to get away and get off the farm. So I don't know if that's correct or not necessarily, but it is an interesting thought. Because what kind of a person was Esau when it comes to his birthright and his character? You know, he sold it for a morsel of food. Yes, ma'am.
I think it's interesting that Esau was his mother's favorite and Jacob was his father. So maybe there was more communication through
his father. It's vice versa, right? Yeah, but yeah, you're right. It's vice versa. You're right, though. Well, and that's another observation I read today, too. And it would have been natural for Rebekah to favor Jacob because he stayed at home. He wasn't the wild man. What kind of women did Esau chase after? Yeah. And Jacob stayed close. So my point goes back to Jacob being the supplanter and yet being the younger. And God beforehand, knowing all things, he said the younger or the elder will serve the younger. Jacob outsmarted his material, fleshly-minded brother. And he got that inheritance. And so, does the Bible justify every characteristic of Jacob? Yes, sir.
Was it Jacob that actually outwitted his father, or was it his mother?
They both worked together.
Yeah.
There you go, yeah. But then you also have the issue of her being told the younger or the elder will serve the younger. So how much, again, that goes back to my question of how much did this play into her faith and her action going forward in her life as she raised these boys? That's the fascinating thing to me as I studied through the characters here of Jacob and Esau. But what we know is that Jacob's name will be changed to Israel in time. And anybody remember what the name Israel means? Prince of God. And he becomes the father of, in reality, the nation of, what's it called? It's not called the nation of Abraham. It's called the nation of Israel. And today, what's the land over there they still call the promised land that they've given back to? What do they still call it? Israel. They were just represented in the Winter Olympics, and they're still considered a people. So Historically, we're still talking about Israel. So anyway, some things to think about here. Look at verse 24, just to kind of unfold this a little bit more. Genesis 25, verse 24. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red, all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand, you know, took hold of Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. 80 being, what's 80? 60? Score is 20, right? You know, I'm getting to that age too where I'm starting to forget if I know what I'm thinking is right. Yeah. All right, verse 27. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, and Rebekah loved Jacob. So you have this obvious favor being shown. Does this favor issue seem to carry out through Jacob or Israel's life? Who does Jacob or Israel favor when it comes to his children? So I wonder, talking about generational attitudes and characteristics, I wonder if Jacob struggled with this idea of favoritism. But then I also say this, when I think about that, in all fairness, I can't imagine having more than one wife. And I can't imagine having more than one child, or two or three by one wife, and having multiple children by several wives. And I don't know how your affection would change. It would seem to me it might change if you favored one wife above the other. And we know that Jacob favored Rachel. And her two sons, Joseph and Benjamin, were highly favored. Do you remember who Jacob was very concerned about sending to Egypt whenever Joseph in Egypt said, I want to see your younger brother, Benjamin, which was his brother. And you remember the story where Jacob didn't like that idea. I don't want you to send back my youngest son, Benjamin. It wasn't a very... So, I don't know. But I know that this was a time where things were done that obviously we're not doing today, or we shouldn't be doing. So, again, you have this this birthright issue now. Look at verse 29. Following. And so Jacob, he sawed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom, or red Edomites. And Jacob said, sell me this day thy birthright. And Esau said, behold, I am at the point to die, and what profit shall this birthright do to me? So what kind of a person is Esau? This old bird don't mean nothing. I'm starving to death here. Give me some food. Kind of like a doper or something, you know. I don't mean to compare him as a bad comparison, but what do people often do when it comes to their addiction to dope? They sell anything. This methamphetamine problem is a major, major problem. And so, again, that's the character of Edom, and then the character of Jacob. Jacob's kind of conniving here, and yet you can think about that. And so Esau said, behold, I am at the point to die, and I'll sell you this birthright. Jacob said, swear to me this day, and he swearing to him, and he sold his birthright unto Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Now, I'm going to run out of time here, but I want to talk about this idea of consequences of sin. I mentioned this in my sermon Sunday morning, and I don't know that we like to talk about this or not, but would y'all... This was a major deal that Esau did. In a moment of time, he was hungry. And being hungry, again, look at the guy. He was a hunter, and most of us might look at him as this valiant hunting man. But in reality, what kind of person was he? I mean, he sold something very valuable. So my question today is what are valuable, very valuable things that people just don't think about that they throw away and they can't get back? And I'll just start with a young teenage girl who's not overseen or supervised very well, and nature takes its course, and then she or he or both of them are allowed to watch too much nonsense and TV, and they're governed by lust, and then all of a sudden something happens and you can't get that back. And I assure you, as a father that's raising a 16-year-old almost, I think about this a lot. Today I talked myself out of calling her boy / friend. They're not really allowed to be boyfriend and girlfriend, right? I talked myself out of calling this boy's dad 3 times today. Because they're on spring break and they're chitty-chatting and they got too much time on their hands. And again, they're not together, but I haven't figured out how I want to frame that conversation. But it's about time for me to have a little conversation. Not because he's doing anything wrong per se, but I want to know where I stand. And I want to know if he feels the same way. And I have a right to know that. Because I want to know if he's a caring, loving parent who wants his child, you know, wants what's best for their children, right? So, again, what are some things that kids, children, adults, in a moment of haste, throw away and you can't get it back? That's why when you think about certain sins, I mentioned this Sunday morning, do certain sins carry heavier consequences than others? I didn't say all sin wasn't sin and all sin wouldn't damn you. I didn't say that. The sin of pride, the pride of life in 1 John 3 is a sin that'll damn your soul. An arrogant, proud, snotty person can lose their soul. And so can the adulterer, the fornicator, the homosexual. But those kinds of sins, having practiced those types of sexual sins, can you get that back? I've often thought about that.
A lot of times, if you teach them respect when they're little, to respect you, they'll respect other people and themselves. But it has to be taught.
I hope so, because I told Abby the other day, I said, I'm not going to beat you, but I want to right now. I said, but you will respect me. Now, don't tell her I said that. But but you're right. I mean, that's I'm trying to earn that respect. And at the same time, respect is something that they have to learn to give to God, because God's not in competition with anybody. So Esau and Jacob are two interesting characters. And as you study through the character of Jacob, don't fail to see his shortcomings. But then look at God, who's on top of this thing, so to speak, and he's recognizing these character flaws. And he knew ahead of time, and he knew that Jacob would be the one that he would bless the nations through. It would not be Esau. So my questions are, the sins of Jacob versus the sins of Esau. This is one to study, not to get mad at, but the sins of Esau, when he sold his birthright, that was it. And remember what the Hebrews writer said in Hebrews 12. He sought it with tears. Couldn't get it back. The man who commits fornication against his wife, and she says, that's it, I've had it, and she puts him away, she has a right to do that in the New Testament. And he may seek after her, and he'll never get her back. And he'll regret that the rest of his life over one silly, stupid thing. And how many people do that? Again, think about that as you consider the weight of sin and what it does to us. Any comments or questions? We'll let Bonner pick it back up, Lord willing, on Sunday, and maybe I've set a good tone for the rest of the course.